Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, April 2nd, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on Dr. Saputo. .com and PRN.fm.
And today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we got a great show for you today that's going to include things like, have researchers found that most cancer is actually preventable?
And fast food has been found to cause depression?
We know steroids are a problem in causing osteoporosis, but how long does it take?
And the dysfunctional side of medicine.
And what about those gut microbes, those microbes in the gut, okay, that regulate the immune system? Are they really powerful, and do they really do that?
And traumatic physical stress is linked to elevated inflammation in heart patients and so much more.
So we got a big show today, and if you want to join us in our conversation and you have questions about our topics on your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
Well, since more than half of all cancer is preventable, let's talk about some of the obstacles that stand in the way of, you know, reducing this cancer burden.
Well, let's start out first by saying that, you know, cancer is an epigenetic disease rather than a genetic disease. And what do I mean by that? You know, epigenetics is something that we call events that occur that stimulate DNA to do things. It's not the DNA itself that's a problem. It's what we do to trigger it. And one of the great studies was done by Dr. Dean Ornish out here at University of California, San Francisco, a few years ago on people who have prostate cancer. And what he did is he took about 300 patients who had Gleason 6 scores for their prostate cancer, which means it's a mild cancer that you can watch and wait safely for. And so they did that. And in half of those people, they went ahead and they didn't do anything to their lifestyle or to the way they exercised or did anything that was related to meditation or relaxation. And they biopsied them at the beginning and looked at the oncogenes, those cancer genes that were turned on, and then looked at them again at the end of 3 months and found out they didn't do anything different, they shouldn't be different, and they weren't. The other half, okay, they biopsied them, the oncogenes were turned on, but they did diet and exercise and stress reduction and meditation, and at the end of 3 months, they biopsied them again, and the oncogenes were turned off. So what we have here is a disease of epigenetics, you know, the stuff that Bruce Lipton talks about in his book, The Biology of Belief.
So lifestyle is so important.
Lifestyle is huge. And then we talk about things like smoking, you know, probably a large number of cancers, maybe a third of the cancers that we have are caused by smoking, and another 20% are caused by weight gain or obesity. So we're looking at issues here that are very preventable. And then you add to it the environmental toxins and our lifestyle and how we live our life, and it's huge.
And, you know, we don't hear much about prevention. Lately, we've been hearing a little bit more about it.
Well, you're not going to hear
it. The American Cancer Society talks about finding the cure, and so do all these walks that they have, you know, walks for the cure. You don't hear walks for prevention.
No.
And, you know, it might seem sort of weird that when you think about cure and you analyze what that means, we really don't have the cure. However, a lot of what they're talking about, and they talk about the cure, is about drugs like chemotherapy.
Well, it's a business.
And business.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, you're looking at 1.6 million new cases of cancer and 577,000 deaths, okay, that are going to occur in the year 2012. You got big numbers. And when the American Cancer Society outright says it's not involved with prevention, it's involved with what? Creating drugs for big pharma to make a ton of profit because they have an incestuous relationship with them that leads them right back at what? At promoting the cure. Let's use the drugs. Let's not try to prevent it. And there are lots of things. Let's look at lifestyle changes over the last 100 years or 150 years. They're huge. We used to live outside, and we got plenty of sunlight. We used to exercise more. We got more sleep because it was less to do at night. We lived in a rural setting for the most part. We had probably less stress than we have today. The food clearly was better because it wasn't so refined, and we didn't do all the funny things we do to it today to put it in a package and have to list ingredients. And, of course, we're more connected to nature at that time. So is it any wonder that we have an epidemic of cancer?
Well, also, when you think about it, there are a few companies, I don't know whether to mention their names or not, but they manufacture the pesticides and the herbicides that actually cause cancer. And some of them, like Monsanto, what they end up doing is genetically engineering the food, like the soybeans, for example, so that they can withstand more pesticides, which are carcinogens, more pesticides, without killing the plant, not thinking about what they could be doing to us. And then they also manufacture the chemotherapy. So this is a real full-service
company
business.
You've got a point there. See, we've deteriorated this country into an economically-based, greed, self-centered system. We don't worry so much about what we do. If we can make a product that's going to make money, we say, oh, well, it's okay because I need the money. And that's basically the bottom line, and it's just crazy.
Well, there's also a pharmaceutical company, AstraZeneca. Mm-hmm. Originally, they were in the business of manufacturing herbicides.
Uh-huh.
And now they're in the business of making chemotherapy.
Yeah, another full-service company, right?
Yeah.
So this whole business of cancer and genetics is a big one, and we need to take care of ourselves, and we have to stop listening to all the ads we see on television and on the radio that are telling us that just buy our products and we'll take care of you. When you think about disease, it's an interesting model to look at the cell as the center of it. If all your cells are healthy, you cannot be sick. You will function optimally if your cells are functioning optimally. And as I've changed my thinking since I graduated medical school and did my residency in internal medicine, I've changed it a lot because I used to think that all we had to do was find the drug that would solve the symptoms and we had everything worked out because that's what I was taught. And so when we make a diagnosis of diabetes or cancer or hypertension, we look for signs and symptoms. We look for some pathological changes. And then based on that, we give it a diagnosis. Well, that's fine. It's a system that can give you information, but it doesn't look at the basic cause of disease. And that's at the cellular level. Now, when you look at the things that make your cells unhealthy, there are only four mechanisms. It's very, very simple. It doesn't have to be as complex as I was taught. And there are only four ways that a cell will malfunction, as I said. One is if you have genetic factors, and that's uncommon. I mean, we had genetic factors all along throughout the history of humanity. But we haven't had a lot of cancer through the history of humanity.
Also have a chance to change the genetics.
Well, that's right, through the epigenetic changes we're talking about. So genetics would be one factor, but it's small. The second thing would be maybe what we consume, the food that we eat, because the raw materials that we consume have a lot to do with whether or not we can make the products that we need. So if you don't consume what you need and get all those 55 essential nutrients we know that a cell has to have, it's going to be short something. It's like looking at a microscopic industrial plant. You know, if you don't have the raw materials in an industrial plant that makes cars, like you're short a steering wheel or a spark plug or a tire, your car's not going to work. Well, neither will your body. Then we look at other kinds of factors like toxic exposures, and that's huge too. If you put things in a cell that don't belong there, then it's going to interfere with cell metabolism. And these are the major things that lead to cellular dysfunction. So we have to find ways to respect that and go back to lifestyle that supports optimal functioning of ourselves so we don't get sick.
Well, we've done a great job of polluting our water and our food and our air and also the things that we put on our bodies and the things that are in our house. There are lots of toxic exposures.
And those are just the biochemical ones. I mean, look at the other kinds of energetic toxins that are around us. Things like the electromagnetic fields
and all that
business.
And toxic thoughts and toxic people.
Well, that's right. So, I mean, we're looking at ways to disturb what we were given by the universe as an optimally functioning body, and we've managed to find ways to destroy it. So that what happens is we wind up with all this illness.
And we also, some of the people that are involved with cancer therapies get a little possessive of what they do, because it's kind of like all we're allowed to do is chemo, radiation, and surgery. And yet when there are new things that come out, most of the time they poo-poo it, or they give people a very difficult time. Like just, for example, this Brzezinski. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does wonderful work with anti-neoplastins and so forth that are not chemotherapy. He's very successful with treating cancers, particularly brain tumors. Mm-hmm. But they gave him such a hard time.
Well, the status quo, see, it's the conservatism in America that holds things in check. Because as soon as you come up with something new, it means something old usually has to go. And the people who are making a lot of money from that something that was old don't like it because they want the money. They don't give a damn about people or what the effect is on people. And so you wind up with the situation
like
it is today.
Just like with all the radiation, when you're talking about the pollution in this other way, look at all the radiation that people are getting. Some of the radiation is causing the cancer, like, for example, with mammograms.
Oh, for sure.
And then some of the follow-up treatments for people that have cancer is more x-rays and more radiation to cause it or to increase the cancer spread.
Well,
with 1.6 million new cancer cases a year.
We're doing something awfully wrong.
And 577,000 deaths. I mean, that's a lot of people that are dying.
So when you look at this, Vicki, then, what's the solution?
We need to be open for what? Well, prevention, but we also need to be open to other ways to treat this disease.
Well, see, that requires a fundamental shift in how we think and how and what our value system is. So we have to evolve to a higher level of consciousness if we want to see a change that's going to be substantive, that is going to make us operate in a way that's different than being self-centered, narcissistic, greedy, and economically driven and materialistically driven. We have to get away from that and start living in a community where we're interested in giving and sharing and loving and working together and saving Mother Earth, which we're not doing. I mean, all this stuff.
And we're not thinking ahead. We're not even
acting
like we even care about our future generations.
That's because we actually talk about it, but we don't care.
Well, we found that a lot of these chemicals affect future generations.
That's right.
So we're affecting our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren.
Well, what happens when you've destroyed the food, water, air, and soil? I mean, you've basically destroyed Mother Earth, at least from the point of view of what humans are going to be able to do to survive. You're not going to really interfere with Mother Earth because she'll just recycle us, as she's probably done many times before. So until we evolve to a higher level of consciousness where we're more community-driven and oriented to doing the right thing, this is exactly what you have to expect.
And not to be overwhelmed. We need to all start with ourselves.
That's right.
Where it all begins, is with ourselves, with our lifestyle and what we do to protect the environment and what we do to prevent illness and to keep ourselves healthy.
Right.
The way we eat, we're an example to everybody around us.
Sure. Well, see, change is something that occurs incrementally. And we need to do what we can to make those changes. So, I mean, look at the life of a pioneer. A pioneer has a 1,000-mile journey, okay? Let's just say it's 1,000 miles, to make it simple. And maybe the pioneer is going to do the first 2 feet of that journey throughout the whole lifetime, his or her lifetime. That's a pioneering change that largely goes unnoticed, but without which change could never happen. We can never get to the end of that 1,000-mile journey unless we do the first 2 feet. And that's why you see pioneers with arrows in their back who are unsung heroes that are persecuted because they're doing something, saying or doing something that's different, that affects the economy or what people's belief system is, and they get pretty rigid and don't want to change. Until we evolve past that, we should expect exactly what we're getting today. That's how the world operates. But like Vicki said, change starts with a single thought. It starts with a single person. It starts with some kind of ideas of what would be good. Hopefully, then, what will happen is that people around us will notice, oh, that's good. I'd like to be like that, too. And so maybe what I will do is I will behave like that as well because I think it's good. That's how you make substantive change.
Also, you know, the power of thought. It's
huge.
so important. But even with things about how you're treating yourself when it comes to like, oh, I want to do something to splurge, mm-hmm. or I want to celebrate. Uh-huh. So you want to celebrate, and so you do something that's unhealthy.
Yeah, right.
And some people that have cancer do that. Now,
that's how they got it.
Now, personally, I would think that if I had cancer, from what I know about it, you know, like, for example, that cancer cells love sugar. Mm-hmm. I think that that would be a motivation enough that I could say to myself, I'm not ever doing that again, instead of saying, oh, I'm going to go treat myself today just because I'm feeling down in the dumps. Even though I know I have cancer, I'm down in the dumps, so I'm going to go have something that's loaded with sugar.
Yeah, right.
Or the same thing with an alcoholic that says, well, I'm going to go have a drink.
Well, some of that's right. I mean, some of that is right. And yet there's always a story behind every way that people act. And I wouldn't say never do things that are different, that are not good for you because you like what the effect is. You can treat yourself that way. But it's odd, as you said, to look at a treat as something that's just making your body unhealthy.
Well, you know, one time we had a patient and she was dying of cancer and she didn't have very much time to go. She was going to die like in a few days, which she did die in a few days. And you wanted me to give her a Reiki treatment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because that helps with healing your soul, really. I mean, it helps you to feel better, too, and it takes away some of the pain, and it can do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And while I was treating her, she said something to me. She was talking about how she she was worried about something that she liked to eat or that she wanted to eat, and it might have a little bit of sugar in it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, there's a time.
this poor woman is dying.
It's like, go have it,
yeah,
you know?
Really.
But, I mean, if you're not at that point where you're not dying, I mean, it's not a good
idea.
Well,
there's a balance of things that you can do to run your lifestyle that make a lot of sense. And you have to know when to say what.
But a lot of times, too, people wait until they already have something, till they're already on the other side of illness before they want to change their diet and their lifestyle and everything.
Well,
so what we're
right.
saying is we started out with prevention, and this is where I think we can close on it, is that it's about prevention. Don't wait until you get sick and the cat's out of the bag to decide that you're going to make these green drinks with all the vegetables in them and
right.
you're going to start jogging and you're going to do this and that to be healthy. You need to start now. And it also includes what you put on your skin, what you brush your teeth with, what you shampoo your hair with. All those things are included because they're loaded with toxins and they're not regulated.
Well, see, you're talking about what real healthcare reform is about. It's not coming from outside someplace that's magic. It's not coming from Washington, D.C. It's not coming from your state level. It's not coming from anywhere.
It's coming from yourself.
That's it. So if you'll take responsibility yourself for a healthy lifestyle, you will be imposing a new healthcare system that is highly reformed because it will be based on wellness and prevention and nutritional and natural therapies when needed. We aren't going to be talking about having to use drugs and surgeries and technologies because you're not even going to get sick. And the ball's in your court. You want to do something about it, you've got the power. But we're so brainwashed by the things that we see and the way we live our lives that we don't make any changes.
And another good start is listening to shows like ours.
Absolutely.
So that you can learn how to prevent illness and to learn all these things. Because many times we report on different types of conditions and articles and research that the doctors don't even know about yet. So you need to be educated to be a team player with your doctor.
Exactly. All right. The lines are open. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Oh, I have a few little fun things to share.
All right,
a
little humor for the soul.
Yeah, we got to have a little of that. We need to be able to laugh at ourselves because laughter is the best medicine.
Indeed.
Behind every successful man is his woman.
I knew that was coming. All right, and it's true.
And behind the fall of a successful man is usually another woman.
Oh, jeez.
If you do not need a parachute to skydive. You only need a parachute to skydive twice.
I see.
Money can't buy happiness, but it sure makes misery easier to live with.
That's a funny way to look at it.
There's a fine line between cuddling and holding somebody down so they can't get away.
Let's see now. What comes to mind when you hear that one?
I used to be indecisive. Now I'm not so sure.
There's progress.
To be sure of hitting the target, shoot first and call whatever you hit the target.
There you go.
Change is inevitable, except from a vending machine.
That's for sure.
Going to church doesn't make you a Christian any more than standing in a garage makes you a car.
Or a mechanic. Okay.
Where there's a will, there are relatives.
Oh, isn't that the truth? All right. Well, thanks for cheering us up, Vicki. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number again is 888-874-4888.
We all know that fast food is unhealthy and that it can make us overweight and it can make us sick. And a new study now shows that it can also affect our mental health by contributing to depression.
Shouldn't be a big surprise, really. I mean, what you eat is what you are, considering that you have to digest and absorb it first. And if you're eating garbage, I mean, you're going to turn into garbage. Isn't that the way it is? And so to find
that saying about you are what you eat.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I threw in the other part that has to do. You also have to digest and absorb it, too. If you eat it, you got a bad digestive tract. Sorry, but it's not going to even get in there. So you have to make sure that digestive health is optimal, too. But
and some of the things we're talking about with fast foods are things like, you know, desserts and cakes and croissants and donuts and hot dogs and pizza and hamburgers.
Right.
Those were in this study.
Uh-huh. And so what they found, okay, over a six-month period, is that people who were on this diet, which is kind of like the all-American diet, are about 50% more likely to develop depression. Not a small number. So they also found that the more fast food you consume, the greater the risk for depression and the severity of it. So
I thought it was also interesting that they said that people eating the fast food and all these baked sweets tend to be single,
yeah.
Less active,
yeah.
Duh, probably like land you on the couch pretty quick. You know,
right.
You might get a rush at the beginning.
Watching the Super Bowl, huh? That's right.
Well, I mean, have you ever noticed if you eat junk food that it makes you tired in a pretty short amount of time?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And people that have long working hours, maybe it's too because they don't want to spend as much time cooking and smokers.
Well, these factors that you're talking about are also factors that would cause depression, or people who are depressed have these kinds
right.
of characteristics. So when they start talking about the diet as the problem, you start wondering if it's the diet by itself or it's some of these other factors.
Because we know that exercise helps people that are depressed to get out of it.
It works as well as taking Prozac or some other SSRI antidepressant. If you exercise 1 hour three times a week, you get the same effect as you do with Prozac, and it's apt to last longer when you exercise than when you use a drug. So, I mean, that's like a duh.
Yeah, so when they say less active and also long working hours, well, you're pretty tired after you've worked a long day, and if you have really long hours, you might not have much of a social life or anything to be happy
plus,
about
if
unless
you're driven
so in
to
love
do
with
more
your job.
Work than anything else. I mean, there you're talking again about reasons why people get depressed. I mean, if your life is just your work. And in the U.S., to work 50 hours a week is not unusual.
But some people like their work.
Well, that's true, but there needs to be a little balance. It's nothing like being up at 6, home at 6, having a little dinner, watching TV for an hour or two, and going to bed and doing that again 6 days a week. That's just a recipe for depression.
It's like there's got to be something more in life.
Well, there is more in life, but that's not what we're taught. We were better off 150 years ago in a lot of ways because we lived outside. We were part of nature. We were connected to the ground, tilling it and growing things and living in rural areas. All these things are factors that are important that we've forgotten about. And now in our high-tech world, we never get outside. It's no surprise there's an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency and all the things that go with vitamin D deficiency, you know, from diabetes to cancer.
So, well, the other thing that I think is kind of interesting is we call a lot of these fast foods comfort foods.
Yeah, well,
but they're not really comforting us. They're making us more depressed. And we know that fast foods can cause obesity and cardiovascular disease.
Well, there's no nutrients in them either. You're looking at empty calories. I mean, look at the high fructose corn syrup that we're doing. All you're getting there is sugar. You're not getting the nutrients that go with it because they've been refined out. Or look at the white flour, where more than 20 nutrients are taken out, 4 are put back in, and it's called what? Enriched? Give me a break.
You can't even buy a fruit juice, I don't think, anymore that's not pasteurized.
Well, that too. I mean,
yeah, they're killing it when they pasteurize
it. Well, plus they're adding high fructose corn syrup to a lot of those things, too. We don't need that. What we need is whole foods.
So let's talk about some of the healthy foods, like the Mediterranean diet that's supposed to be good for depression.
Sure.
That's high in B vitamins and the omega-3s that are the fish and olive oil. You know, fruit. And nuts and fish and vegetables are healthy.
Well,
they're
it's
healthy
like,
for our minds.
Sure.
Too.
Well, there's a little rule of thumb that I use. It's fruits and vegetables, seeds and nuts, herbs and spices. Have a nice day. If you'll do those things and live your life that way, you're going to be way ahead of what we're doing with the sad American diet. I mean, that's for sure. And again, if you don't take in the nutrients your brain needs, how is it going to function right? If you don't have those essential fatty acids, which 95% of us are short in, you can't make a healthy brain cell. It's just about that simple. Okay, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Alan from Brooklyn. Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing a little better. How are you guys?
We're doing good.
Okay.
It's good to hear you feeling better.
Listen, I was wondering, when I go shopping and I just go to a health food store and look at the products, I notice a lot, you know, people talk about sugar a lot, but I notice a lot of vegetarian, organic products have tons of salt. And I asked the person in the store, and they said, well, they use a lot of salt because they don't use preservatives. And I was wondering, it's pretty unhealthy, I would guess.
Well, we know that we have way too much salt in this country, and we know that frozen food sort of doesn't have the same flavor as something fresh. You know, when you go out and pick it and eat it, it's a whole lot different than when you freeze it for a few months and then go eat it then. And the salt does tend to enhance it. So does MSG. And that's why we tend to use these things in food. I think they're just flavor enhancers. But it's not healthy. So,
you
Alan,
know,
you
too,
got...
Also, it hasn't been that long that people have been paying that much attention to organic foods. And what's happened is that a lot of big companies have jumped on the bandwagon because it's become important to a lot of people. And so more companies are getting into producing organic foods, but it doesn't mean that the contents in the food are all that healthy. I mean, you can have organic. You go to the department where they have the desserts. You can buy organic brownie mix and organic cake mix and all those kind of things.
Well, high fructose corn syrup can be organic, too.
Now, I was researching because I was diagnosed with the beginnings of Parkinson's, and I was Googling a lot of things, and I came across this thing. It's called Mucuna purinus. Am I pronouncing
herb.
It?
Uh-huh.
It's an herb, and a lot of companies have, you know, they have comments from the people that use it, and they say it does help them with their shaking.
Well,
it
maybe.
Has,
you know,
it's,
you really need clinical trials to know the answer to that, and we don't get money to do much to do research on herbs and on supplements because there's just a collusion between big pharma and
have you heard
the FDA and the NIH. So, Alan, thanks for calling. That's a good tip.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
You bet. The lines are open. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. Listen to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about your health, give us a call. Again, the number, 888-874-4888.
Millions of people around the world are prescribed glucocorticoids. Those are drugs like that are steroids, like cortisone and prednisone and so forth, that family. And they're prescribed these drugs for a wide variety of inflammatory conditions, including things like rheumatoid arthritis and asthma and inflammatory bowel disease and vasculitis. You know, although they're effective and they're used so much, one of the potentially serious side effects of these medications are steroid-induced osteoporosis. And I know this firsthand.
Right.
Because years ago, probably 20 years ago, I had life-threatening allergies, and I was on prednisone for a long time, and I ended up fracturing my ankle, both bones in my ankle.
Yeah, boy, that was
an steroid-induced osteoporosis.
Right, and at the time we thought, gee, that happened fast because you weren't on them that long, and now we know that just 3 months of taking these things causes the problem. And we know that about 5% of women that are postmenopausal worldwide are taking these kinds of steroids. So we've got an epidemic of osteoporosis to begin with, and then you add this on top of it. It's like adding kerosene to the fire.
It's mostly the ones that are taken by mouth. I don't think it's the injectable ones in the joint, you know.
Well, not in the joint, but if you give it intravenously, that's another story. That's the worst way that you can get it. And you can also get it by inhaling it. So the people that have asthma that are inhaling steroids, we know have an increased risk of osteoporosis as well.
I don't think so much about the creams, though. However, things
they do. Plus, they make your skin thin. So you have to look at what steroids do. They block the autoimmune reaction, the allergic reaction, very nicely by having your immune system quiet down. It basically is like chemotherapy to immune cells. It lyses them so that there's less antibody being made. But at the same time, it doesn't cause tissue to heal very well. Fact is, if you inject it into joints more than a few times, what you'll do is reduce the inflammation in those joints, but you'll also increase you'll decrease the amount of healing that will occur. So when you're putting steroids in your body, you're reducing the healing response rather than promoting the healing response, even though if pain has been your problem in a joint, it may help it immensely in the short term.
I think we should talk about some of the causes of this besides steroids, you know, things like drugs.
Oh, like there are a ton of drugs.
Dilantin and heparin and Coumadin and some of the SSRIs and the diabetic drugs like Avandia, and then there's Actos and thyroid and diuretics.
Yeah, well, these are all big things, and that's a good thing to point out, Vicki, because we are causing a lot of the epidemic of osteoporosis that we're seeing, not just by our lack of exercise, although that's an important factor, but by the drugs that we're taking. So it's something that we need to really be attuned to. And we should be looking at how to prevent the problem of osteoporosis as well. It's not just about avoiding steroids. I mean, that, of course, is something you want to do if you can. But we should be out there with weight-bearing exercise. I mean, that's the big deal. You go out and exercise or playing a little basketball or a little bit of tennis or some sport where you're moving your feet or even a treadmill or working with weights. I mean, all those things are good.
And getting enough vitamin D.
And absolutely, vitamin D. There's an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency, and we probably, most of us, need somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3 a day. And we should all have our vitamin D3 levels measured, because if we're less than 30, we got a problem, and there are going to be lots of things that are associated with it, like cancer and hypertension and diabetes and cancers. I mean, an enormous number of diseases related to
that. And what about vitamin K? Can you take that without your doctor prescribing it?
You can, but it's better always to have somebody who understands nutritional medicine doing that. And that, by the way, is not necessarily your doctor. Because how much nutrition do we get? About an hour in medical school, and then we come out saying, yeah, we know nutrition, and the guys that do this nutritional stuff, like the dietitians and nutritionists, don't know what they're doing.
A lot of people think, well, they just need to take more calcium, but, you know, if our bones were only made out of calcium, they'd be like chalk.
Right.
That'd so
be
there's
calcium
other
carbonate.
Things, too, like what are some of the other things? Boron and strontium.
Copper and magnesium and copper and silica. And I mean, all these things are what are necessary to make healthy bone. And the other thing is we take too much calcium in general. I think that the recommendations that most doctors give for people who have osteoporosis, of porosis are ridiculous. We shouldn't be taking 2 grams a day of that because, let's face it, what's happening?
We're losing calcium. If our bones don't need it, it's going someplace else, like our arteries.
Yeah, but our bones do need it. And the idea that the doctors are thinking is take more calcium because that will fix the bones. And they're right. It will help the bones. But the problem is if the bones are already losing calcium, and where is it going? Into your arteries. So if you're taking more than 500 milligrams a day of calcium, I think you're probably being excessive. It's doing all these things together. It's the diet, it's the exercise, it's a little bit of calcium, it's the vitamin D3 and K2 and the essential fatty acids and the low-salt diet and the alkaline diet. You know, we have acidic diet as what? It pulls calcium out of bones to neutralize the acid.
Also, a lot of people don't realize that alcohol can contribute to osteoporosis.
So will smoking.
Smoking,
sure.
Yeah.
And then there are some things like strontium, which we can take in small amounts, because we know that there may be a potential risk for some kinds of cancer from strontium. So a small amount of that's a good idea.
A high-protein diet's a good idea.
High protein, yeah, you got to have protein to be able to make healthy bone. So what we have here is a system that works very nicely. If we look at lifestyle first, and we stay away from the drugs that cause the problem, and we just, you know, live our lives in a healthy way.
And what's scary when you think about it is a lot of the people are getting osteoporosis in their backs, so they're breaking their backs.
And that's what happens when you take these steroids. It's more, it's causing more vertebral fractures. All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
Collected gems and truths for mental health and more. Like the only person who doesn't make a mistake is one who never does anything.
Ah, that's right.
A gem is not polished without rubbing, nor a person perfected without trials.
Indeed, and lots of mistakes, that's right.
Falling down is not defeat. Defeat is when you refuse to get up. Forget about the people in your past. They didn't make it to your future for a reason.
I like that one. That's great.
And here's a big one. Small children can disturb your sleep. Big children, your life.
That's a problem.
That can be a problem. Even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there.
That's right. Get off your duff and do something.
We never stand taller than when we stoop down to help someone who has fallen.
That's for sure.
Take care of your body. It's where you live. You take care of your house, your car, your garden. Take care of you.
What a concept.
And here's another one that I found that was one of my favorites for a long time. Oh, and if you can't afford a doctor, go to the airport.
What?
You'll get a free x-ray, a breast exam, and if you mention Al-Qaeda, you'll get a free colonoscopy.
There it is, free medical care at the airport. I like that.
Okay, so if anybody has any questions about your health or you want to join into our conversation, you can call us at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
Okay.
Scientific retractions in medical journals is on the rise, and the editors of 2 major journals reported their disappointment in the falsification of data and plagiarism. This is just really terrible, isn't it?
Well, it really is. I mean, to make scientific retractions is really showing us the bad side of what medicine's all about.
The dysfunction.
Well, it's very dysfunctional, and you have to look at what is happening and why it's happening. And there have been at least 5 editors-in-chief of major journals that have either quit their jobs or vocally said something about the low quality of information that's going into their journal articles. There were 2 that came out. There's a guy named Dr. Fang, who's the editor-in-chief.
Dr. Fang.
Actually, his first name is Ferrick Fang. There's a name for you. But anyway, it has lots of implications. Let's not go there. He's the editor-in-chief of a journal called Infection and Immunity. And there's an Arturo Castadevall, who's the editor of a journal that's called MBio, that's also about infection and immunity. And both of them have come out saying that the number of retractions that they're having to put in their journals has increased more than tenfold in the last decade, while the number of journal articles has only increased 44%. And a lot of this is because of just mistakes that are made, and that's understandable, but too many are from misconduct. Then you look at the other people who have complained. Catherine DeAngelis, who's what? The editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Medical Association, one of our most prominent journals. She didn't quit her job, but she certainly made some comments that said that the stuff that was coming across her desk that was being published was a disaster. And look at the New England Journal of Medicine. Marcia Angel, a Harvard doctor who was the editor-in-chief for a number of years there, quit her job, said she couldn't take it anymore. And she wrote some books that disclosed all the bad information that was coming into the journals because of the conflicts of interest, mainly with the pharmaceutical industry, who was funding two-thirds of the research that went in her journal. And the same thing with Ushma Neal from the Journal of Clinical Investigation. She said the same thing, and she quit her job and said, the quality of stuff that's coming across my desk is a problem. And she wrote an article that says, stop misbehaving to the researchers. And why does all this happen?
Well, they have the wrong incentives, you know.
Well, that's right. I mean, they're out there what? This is a job.
It's publish or perish.
It is. They need to make money, okay, to live. And if their research isn't turning out right, there's a tendency to falsify data, which is what's happening a lot of the time, and or to plagiarize from other articles or to sensationalize things because people will spend more time talking about what they're doing. And the surest ticket to getting a grant or a job is to be published in a high-profile journal and then being sensational about what you do. This kind of dishonest behavior is sometimes necessary if they want to salvage their careers, and they put that above just the joy of discovering what good science is all about.
Yes, so just think about it. There have been the retractions have increased 10 times. That's a lot.
Well, that's just in 10 years.
Yeah.
Now, the journals have a responsibility, too. I mean, we have to pay for that information. And I think that's wrong. I think a lot of the information that goes into scientific journals is what? It's stuff that comes from National Institutes of Health Research. Who pays for that? It's we the people. And then the journals go ahead and they take that information that we've already paid for, and then they charge us for the results.
And also, how do the doctors keep up? It used to be that the doctors were supposed to keep up with the journals, with what's new in the news and so forth.
Can't.
But now you can't even trust it.
Look, you can't even read one article in a day and really understand it, because you have to go back and look who did the study. Who were the people that were chosen as the subjects in the study?
Well, a lot of times,
who
yeah,
funded
there's conflicts
it?
Of interest.
Okay, there are conflicts all over the place. And then you have to look at the raw data, because if you don't do that, you don't know what they did. Did they fudge just one or two or three people in a study that had 100 people in it? I mean, there you're looking at what can make a study look like it's positive and not be positive. The information should be readily available to our doctors who need that information, and they can't subscribe to 50 journals, nor could they read what's in 50 journals.
Well, see, a lot of times they get the grants when they publish in these high-profile journals.
Well, that's right, and that's the whole idea there. So when we're looking at these doctors who are in the hospital working to save your life because you're in the ICU or CCU or just there because of some problem that you've got, you'd like to think that the information that's published in the journals that they're reading is accurate. How would you feel if they gave you a treatment that didn't work? I mean, look back when they were doing bone marrow transplants for breast cancer. Somebody out of South Africa faked some data, and everybody was raving about how good it was, and we're treating them with bone marrow transplants. In fact, one of our own friends died from that, from doing that operation. Talking about things that are serious, this is incomprehensible if things are that bad. We need to treat our research as something sacred, and honesty and integrity are the most important things.
So how do you get the competition out of it?
Well, there are lots of ways to do it. I mean, you can hire people and have them just do jobs. That would be one thing. That's what the pharmaceutical industry does. They'll just hire people to do it. But people are in medical centers. It's publish or perish. You don't publish a bunch of stuff and money doesn't come back to your institution. What value are you to them from an economic point of view?
So they're under too much pressure.
Way too much pressure. And it just tells us that this is our, you know, we've got a problem here. And it's, again, it's another reflection of how our culture works or doesn't work. I mean, that's what we're really talking about, is how it doesn't work.
And then if one of them rats on somebody else, then they get, what do you call it, blackballed.
Well, yeah, the whistleblowers always get that.
Whistleblower, yeah.
Particularly if they work for the FDA. We've seen a number of cases where that's true. The business of medicine runs it. It's not the ethics. It's not people who are caring that are running it. And it doesn't mean that there aren't people in medicine who have the highest integrity, but they've got information that's bad.
Well,
and so they
wind
up doing the wrong thing in terms of treatment because of that.
You know,
that's wrong.
A lot of our shows are about studies. But if you follow us, you'll notice that sometimes from week to week, there are conflicting studies.
1 week it'll show one thing, the next week it'll show something else, and then you look at it and go, how the hell can that happen if medical research is so good?
We just got through reading this study. Now this one comes out.
Yeah.
But like you said, you really have to pay attention to who did the studies.
Well, that's right, and why they did it. I mean, if Big Pharma does the study, I just categorically throw it out because they have a reputation that's absolutely horrible. They'll publish stuff knowing that it's wrong, or they'll withhold information. They won't publish articles that they could publish that have been done that they spent a lot of money on because it doesn't serve their purpose, because it came out wrong. It didn't show what they wanted to show, and their drugs would never make it past the FDA if they did. And it's a business. It's about return on investment to stockholders. It's not about how can I help you, the sick one that's in the ICU. There's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah, see, they have so much money that they have too many connections with, like, people in the government and so forth.
Well, there's a revolving door, Vicki, between the CDC and Big Pharma. Look at Julie Gabbarding. She was the chief of the CDC under Bush. And where does she work now? She works for Big Pharma doing what? In the Department of Immunizations. Talk about a conflict of interest. And it's no wonder, because she came up with all this stupid advice. It was outrageously stupid about the swine flu epidemic and that dumbass vaccine that should be banned because it's such a stupid thing to do. I mean, just read some of Gary Null's work on that. You got a pioneer in New York who did that work and stood up to the state of New York and won his case because he's right.
And didn't you write an article, The Infection Deception, on our website, drsaputo.com?
I did, and it's published in the Townsend Letter. It's got references, and it explains why the swine flu vaccine is such a joke. It's a mercenary thing that's goal is to make money.
You see, if the government does the studies and it comes out not in favor of the pharmaceutical company, mm-hmm. then they have a problem with the pharmaceutical company, and they're getting money from the pharmaceutical company, so there's conflicts of interest all over the place.
Well, it gets worse than that. Big Pharma will sponsor the studies itself. The NIH spends $32 billion a year in research, a lot of money. Big Pharma spends $90 billion a year. And they give their grants to people that they want to. And then after the data has been collected, you may have very good scientists doing the studies. They say, thank you very much for doing the study. Now we'll interpret it for you. Have a nice life. Well, hello. Can you trust that? You'd have to be a moron to trust that, especially with their track record. I mean, look at the Vioxx story. We've told that so many times on this show. Where in 1995, they knew it caused heart attacks and strokes. In 1999, they came out and the drug was approved by the FDA, and the company didn't mention to them about the heart attacks and strokes. And then in 2004, it was taken off the market voluntarily by the drug company because they knew what was coming. And when we collected their internal records in the Freedom of Information Act, we found out all this stuff. They knew about it then. Now, that's outright murder of 50,000 people who died from heart attacks and strokes because of this damn drug that was out there. And the orthopedists are saying, well, what are we supposed to believe? What are we supposed to use? And we have to treat the pain, don't we? Well, yeah, but come on, give me a break. You can't support a drug company, and I don't think that most of them do now that they know the whole story. But that's the story of every damned non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug that's out there.
Well,
they all have problems that are major, and they shouldn't be on the market, in my opinion.
Well, I also know that I've heard you say that you think that this is one of the problems the popularity or the unpopularity of the photon stimulator because it's very good at treating pain. There's no side effects from it. There's no downside to it.
Yeah.
But if it became big, what would it do to the pharmaceutical industry? Because we have all these pain clinics and everything where people are, you know,
billions and billions of dollars taking all these drugs. Well, why do you think the FDA turned down our request to have it approved, have the 510K approved? We know exactly what it is. They know what works. We know what works. They actually sympathized with me when I went back there with the inventor of the technology as a good Samaritan and supported this thing. They said, yeah, we know, but we're not going to approve it. And they gave us these stupid reasons why they weren't going to approve it. And all it was is a charade. It was a way of trying to appease us and saying, well, now you got to go do another study. Okay, well, now we are doing another study. And maybe this time it will work. But I'll bet you they'll find something to stop it again because that's how they work. It's a money game.
The other thing I've noticed in some of these medical journals is that they'll write an ad that'll take up a whole page, and it looks like it's a study. I mean, it looks like it's impressive about what this medication can do.
And
then at the bottom of it, very small, it'll say advertisement.
Well, look at the drugs like the SSRI antidepressants. You know, your Prozac and the drugs that all fit into that category. Those drugs don't do a damn thing. The biggest studies that were done show that it's all placebo, okay? And even if there was a 2 or 3% advantage over placebo, say placebo was 30% beneficial or helped 30% of people.
I think it's 50 to 51%.
Well, let me finish what I'm saying because what the situation is if it's 30% that placebo does, which it generally does, if your drug does 32%, the FDA will approve it. Which means that almost all of it is effective placebo, and a little tiny bit is from the drug, and all the side effects that go with it. Doesn't it make a lot more sense to give the placebo and do it with integrity?
Without the side effects.
Without the side effects, I'll say. I mean, that's absolutely right.
And yet you talk to people that take them, they just swear by them.
Well, it doesn't matter if they swear by them or not. What matters is what are we doing to the people of this country and to the world by coming out with these drugs that are basically 90% placebo? And they have side effects that cause lots of problems. When you look at 400,000 deaths every year from drugs in just this country, that's a staggering number. A staggering number of deaths. And when we get all excited about what happened in Iraq, hello?
Remember,
anybody listening out there?
Remember about 30 or 40 years ago how popular it was for people to take Valium?
Oh, yeah.
I remember when I was working in the hospital, all the patients were on Valium, and they'd all be all sleeping in the afternoon. And I had a neck problem, and I remember the doctor prescribed Valium to help me to relax my neck and so forth.
Sure.
But I realized I was getting addicted to it because I go to bed at night and I couldn't go to sleep. And then one night I thought, well, I'll just take a half of one. And I got up and I took the half of one and I fell asleep way before that medicine could have taken an effect. That's when I knew to stop taking it.
All right.
Psychological placebo.
All right. We're at the end of our show here. I want to thank you for joining us. And I want to remind you, go to drsaputo.com. It's drsaputo.com. Every day we come out with a new radio show that's in video, okay, that's a 3 to 5 or 7 minute show. And I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and drsaputo.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and from 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived on drsaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
All right. If you enjoy this show, tell your friends. Let's share the information. Have a great week.